Good morning. If you're just switching on the radio, the Deputy Chief Constable, Drew Harris, is with us in the studio. Deputy Chief Constable, good morning.
Good morning.
This report, I put it to the inspector that the PSNI are possibly, the officers on the ground, are possibly getting sick, sore and tired of being inspected.
Well, inspection is an important part of accountability, but secondly, with the HMIC's inspection here, in particular around vulnerability, we've had the benefit of real experts looking at how we're dealing with missing persons, child sexual exploitation, domestic abuse, and their report will make a difference. We have a commitment to dealing with this area, as people would expect. It is a big priority for us, but they have then set out what more we need to do in areas for improvement, and when we're committed to implementing that then.
Yeah, I'll come to that in a second, but I'm just thinking of the officers themselves who seem to be off on the sick. A lot of people off on the sick, and other officers having to work overtime to cover for them. The suggestion being that a lack of morale leads to sickness.
Well, the two principal causes for sickness within the police service are stress and illness associated with stress, and also then musculoskeletal type injuries. And so obviously morale may have an impact on stress, but what we have done is to make sure that we have the processes to support people at work, not to wait until that they're on sick leave and absent from their work. We have put in place our occupational health unit, which is one of the most advanced in the UK. The Federation have provided funding in terms of additional counselling for officers showing signs of stress or suffering from stress. And also then we support the police treatment centres, which provide bespoke treatment suitable for police officers. So we do a lot to keep our staff at work, but also then a lot of our sickness is long-term sickness, and we have devised new ways of bringing people back to work, in effect to give them a soft landing as a return to work and give them time then to adjust into the workplace before they go on back to fully operational duties.
But are you on the lookout, because every industry has shirkers, are you on the lookout for that sort of officer?
Well, of course we're on the lookout for that, but that is not the character of our sickness. We do not have the Monday morning or Friday afternoon type problem. Our long-term sick, our sick figures are mainly made up of long-term sick, and these are people who are suffering from illness, who have the ailments, and we have to find a way of bringing them back to work.
Are you surprised that you've done so poorly in relation to the vulnerable? Because this has been talked about. I've talked about this on this programme many a time.
Well, I wouldn't say we've done poorly. What has happened here is that we have put structures in place. We've responded to reports like the Marshall report, and we've put in specialist officers to deal with things like child sexual exploitation and domestic abuse. What has happened here is that we have had experts who have applied really a very high standard to this, have assessed what we've done and have pointed out areas for improvement. And we are entirely committed in dealing with those areas of improvement and making the improvements that they require. And that will be done in conjunction with the policing board. We have to satisfy the policing board and in turn then the Minister of Justice of what we are taking forward and our competence and capability to deal with the most vulnerable in society.
And do you get a sense ever that people look for fault, however? And I'm talking really about the officer who's dealing directly with the vulnerable person.
Well, the officers who are dealing with the vulnerable individuals, it's my responsibility to provide them with the skills and also the support structure so they can do their job the best of their ability. We have very fine individuals in the police service, both officers and staff, and all of them have a very high commitment to public service. But it's my role and the Chief Constable's role to make sure that they have the necessary structures and support in place. And in effect, that's what this report is pointing out to. We need to educate them further, more training, and also then to ensure there's consistency of response. And that's our part of this, but we also then want to improve our relationships with partners, both statutory partners, but also then the voluntary sector as well. And that's well underway too. And this all forms a part of then the bigger work around the executive's programme for government.
One of the other points I put to Michael Cunningham was about informants. Are the vulnerable ever liaised with, for want of a better term, because they have a method of being informants for the PSNI and provide vital information for investigating officers?
Well, vulnerable people are dealt with in line with our policies in respect of vulnerability. And vulnerability comes from things like age and disability, the risk of abuse or the risk of neglect. That's what we're talking about when we're dealing with vulnerability. So if we are dealing with those individuals, it's very much about making sure that we put in place protection for them, that we deal with the issues that they are flagging up and get them special care and support that they need. Now, we may not be the organisation to provide that. To add on an extra layer of complexity into their life, such as being a covert human intelligence source, would be really outside our thinking, I have to say.
Would you actually advise police officers or investigating officers or detectives against liaising with a vulnerable person?
We would liaise with a vulnerable person for the specific issue that they've come to the police with. We want to make sure that they are safe, that they're not subject to repeat victimisation, and we want to be in a position where we can intervene with them. And lots of crimes around vulnerability are repeat crimes. People are repeat victims, and we want to break that cycle for them and by getting them the appropriate support and making the appropriate criminal justice interventions.
So what do you do now over the next year? Because they'll be back again, won't they? The inspector would return at some point in 2017.
Yes, they will. Probably again in February. And what we will have done by then is that we will have submitted our response of these areas of improvement to the policing board. And the policing board will examine that closely. They will want to be satisfied as to what we're doing before then a report is ultimately sent back to the Minister of Justice. And so there'll be a very rigorous approach to this, and it's just not about satisfying ourselves. We have to satisfy our oversight body, the policing board, as to what we're doing here.
I did say at the very beginning of the programme, the most scrutinised police force in Europe. Is that just a cliche, or are you the most scrutinised?
Well, the scrutiny that we have, we may be, but the scrutiny that we have for serves a purpose in terms of public confidence and also then excellence in the work we do. And we see the HMIC report very much about, it's not criticism for criticism's sake, it's criticism around areas where you can do better and where we've seen good practice elsewhere, and you may wish to consider that in respect of dealing with vulnerable people. And we are here to protect the most vulnerable, so it's entirely appropriate that the HMIC focuses on this and gives us a report which helps us take that forward.
You've had a quiet summer, haven't you? Relatively quiet.
Well, we don't like to use the Q word ever, but we've had it. There has been a good summer for Northern Ireland. It's not just been a good summer for the Police Service of Northern Ireland. And undoubtedly, coming into this year, 2016, there was concerns about tensions, but almost it's been the opposite. And in some ways, it has felt like a year of reconciliation, and that's all to the good. And the less violence there is, then it is the less acceptable it is for anyone to resort to violence. And that is really good news for our society, and we obviously benefit as well.
A lot of people contacted us on the run-up to the 12th about the controversial bonfires, and they were saying the police should be intervening and ensuring that those bonfires are dismantled. Probably justified with the softly approach, but that can't go on forever. Those bonfires that put people's houses at risk year in, year out.
And yes, and our part in this is to support the other statutory bodies who have primary responsibility in respect of bonfires. Bonfires are unregulated activity, and councils and environmental agency have a role there, and obviously we will support them in doing that. But we have a policing role on the night to make sure the crime is prevented and to prevent a risk of harm and risk of damage to property. And obviously we would support the fire service in their endeavours in that as well. But it is not primarily responsibility of ourselves to in effect dismantle bonfires. We will support the other statutory agencies with the prime responsibility in respect of those.
So those people who build a bonfire really close to a house that's absolutely massive and is obviously a threat, it's not the police's responsibility to go to them and say that needs to come down.
Well, as I've said, it's unregulated activity which is happening on somebody's property, and if people want to intervene, we will support them in doing so. If a bonfire is so obviously going to cause danger or reckless, we do negotiate, and we have negotiated with those who build bonfires to reduce the scale of them, etc., or indeed move them. But there is a strong culture of support for the bonfires in the areas in which they are put up, and that's the reality of it. The communities where these are happening, there's a strong culture and strong support for them. So we work with the community moderate the dangers of them, but we support all our statutory agencies in their approach to bonfires.
Yeah, but is that sort of code for your concern there might be a riot if you intervene?
No, it's not. It is not our responsibility, though, to dismantle bonfires. We neither have the equipment nor the skilled people required to do that. And although bonfires are built in a very unregulated way, when any statutory body goes close to them, they are subject immediately to health and safety. And you need all sorts of heavy lifting devices and machinery to remove a bonfire.
Finally, do you need more staff?
Well, we have the staff which our budget allows for. Yes, everybody could say.
But as a senior officer, do you sit around a table with George Hamilton and say, we need more men and women here?
No, we don't do that. What we sit around and say is, we've got this budget, how do we use it to the best effect? And we're always looking closely at our structures, our processes. We're going through a huge exercise at the moment, really looking into every corner of the organisation to make sure that we're spending our money effectively. We have a job to do, which is protecting this society, and we want to make sure every pound is well spent.
And in the meantime, police officers generally, other people working in security, they are vulnerable here, aren't they?
Well, there does remain a security threat, and our officers are well aware of that, and we cope with that on a day-to-day basis in terms of both our private and our professional lives as well. But that has been a long-standing threat, and we do an awful lot of work to make sure we mitigate the impact that would have on the service that we provide to the public. We are here as a public service, and we're here to protect the public, and that is our duty.
Deputy Chief Constable Drew Harris, thanks for calling by. Thank you.